my happy home to see what I could find out. I left my folk and friends with the aim to clear my mind out. Hit the rowdy road, many kinds I met there, many stories told me all of the way to get there. Ooh. So on and on I go, the seconds tick, the time out, there's so much left to know when I'm on.
Welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Unspun tries to unravel the hype and illusions of corporate media through in-depth interviews with truth-tellers, advocates, and activists from around the world. We are streaming live on the internet. Go to kkrn.org and click on the Listen button. Unspun is a call-in show. We invite questions and comments from our listeners. Our number in the studio is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. You can also send me an email at unspun@kkrn.org. Our guest today is Dr. Robert Epstein. He is a senior research psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology, as well as the former editor-in-chief of Psychology Today magazine. A PhD from Harvard University, has published 15 books on artificial intelligence, creativity, stress management, and other topics, as well as more than 250 scientific and popular articles, including a recent report in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences called The Search Engine Manipulation Effect, or SEME, or SEAM. I'm not sure. I have to ask him how that acronym is pronounced there. So, and the rest of the title is Its Possible Impact on Elections. SEME is one of the largest behavioral effects ever discovered and is nearly invisible as a source of influence, which makes it especially dangerous. Dr. Epstein's research suggests that SEME is currently determining the outcomes of upwards of 25% of the world's national elections, and that it is not affecting, and that it is not just affecting how people vote. His newest research suggests that search rankings are impacting virtually every decision we make without our knowing this is happening and without leaving a paper trail for authorities to examine. You can learn more about his work at drrobertepstein.com, and I will put links to his website and his latest study on KKRN's website along with the archives of this show. Well, now let's welcome Dr. Robert Epstein. Dr. Epstein, welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling.
Well, thank you, Doug. It's good to be with you.
It's really a pleasure to have you. Your latest study, or maybe it's not your latest study, but the one you published last year in July, about the effects of the search engine manipulation. How do you say that acronym? How do you say it?
We say SEAM.
SEAM, like unseemly.
Yeah. Yes, or like, that's how things seem.
Yeah. Yeah, it has several meanings there.
Right.
So what you're saying here and quoted is currently determining the outcomes of upward of 25% of the world's national elections, and that is just not affecting how people vote. That's a pretty shocking statement. So maybe you could give our listeners a quick synopsis of your study and your conclusion so they'll understand what we're talking about.
Sure, and let me say first that the statement that you just read is in fact shocking to me. I've been shocked, and my collaborator Ronald Robertson, we've been shocked as we've learned more about this phenomenon, the search engine manipulation effect, as we've learned about the impact that search engines can have on people's thinking, on everything they believe, on their feelings. As we've learned more about this, we have become more and more concerned, because we certainly never expected to find what we have found and what we keep finding in the various experiments that we conduct. But this started a few years ago. I was looking at the scientific literature on the impact that search engines have on consumer behavior. And of course, everyone kind of knows that, you know, that there is an impact there, because, you know, we all kind of know if something is higher up in search rankings, we're more likely to buy it. We're more likely to click on it. And so a lot of people had been studying that. So those kinds of studies have been going on for almost a decade, I think. And sure enough, studies have found that 50% of all of our clicks go to the top two search items in search results. More than 90% of all clicks go to the first page, so very few people go beyond the first page of results. And, of course, companies know this. They know how important it is to get higher in search rankings, so that a whole massive industry, has evolved called SEO, or search engine optimization. That's an industry that helps companies go up another notch in search rankings by trying to kind of fool Google's search algorithm. And because if you can get yourself up another notch, that could be worth millions of dollars in sales, or it could be the difference between your business succeeding and failing. So, you know, I had been looking at that research literature, and, you know, I simply had a hunch. That's how this whole thing started. I had a hunch. I thought, you know, if people really believe that, you know, higher-ranked items are better, maybe they also believe higher-ranked items are more true, so maybe, something that's higher in search rankings that's relevant to a belief that they have or a preference that they have, so not necessarily related to something they're going to buy, but just anything that's listed higher in search rankings, maybe that could impact how people think about things. So early 2013, Ronald Robertson and I conducted an experiment, randomized, controlled experiment, double-blind, and all that stuff that makes an experiment, really valid in the behavioral sciences. And we conducted an experiment in which people were randomly assigned to one group or another. In one group, higher-ranked search items favored one political candidate. In a second group, higher-ranked search results favored another candidate. And the third group, they were mixed up, so they favored neither candidate. And I had speculated that just using search rankings, just by, you know, changing the order of search results, in other words, that maybe we could shift people's voting preferences, I thought, by 2 or 3%. That's what I thought. And I thought, well, that's not much, but still that would be important, because maybe that could affect the outcome of a very close election. That was my thinking. So we ran the experiment, and we got a shift of 48.4% in our first experiment. 48.4%.
That's pretty amazing, really.
That's astonishing. Yeah, that's just unbelievable. So we thought, well, either we've made some sort of mistake or we've stumbled onto something really, really, really important. And that's how it started. That was early 2013. And, it's just grown from there. We've learned so much about this. And so we do call this the search engine manipulation effect, or SEM. And it is very, very disturbing stuff, because, you know, this is the search engine is the gateway to the internet. This is how we find stuff out, and so there's potentially a very big problem here, as I can explain as we go along, based on the the additional research we've done now over the years.
Yeah, the well, obviously Google is the most dominant, ubiquitous search engine in the world, and I read an article on Politico about well, the Google executive, his name is Amit Singhal, and he found it necessary. I mean, your study is well documented; it's available online. I read most of it and several articles related to it. It's well documented. It's science. It's not something that comes to question. But he wrote, "quote: There is absolutely no truth to Epstein's hypothesis that Google could work secretly to influence election outcomes." So and we know that Google's in trouble around the world because of its monopolistic and its what I would call predatory capitalist approach to business. So so what was you had to actually defend yourself against Amit Singhal's critique there, which more or less just swept aside your work.
Well, all Singhal did was just say, you know, that this isn't true, and we would never do such a thing, and we're a really cool company. But he never actually talked about the research, which, as you pointed out, is actually rock solid research published, for goodness sakes, in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And in that paper, we actually reported the results of 5 experiments with 4,450 participants in 2 countries. And I mean, this stuff is so rock solid that I'm just going to tell you about this invitation that I have that's coming up in about 2 weeks, and I'm so blown away by it. This is so rock solid that, among other places where I've been invited to speak on this stuff, I've been invited about 2 weeks from now to go to Washington and to talk to the Council of Scientific Society Presidents, this organization representing more than 100 scientific societies in all the sciences. They have offices near the White House. And each year they invite 3 so-called pioneers of science to talk to them. And this year I'm one of them, and the other 2 are a medical researcher from UC Berkeley who supposedly maybe has discovered the cure for cancer. The other one is a guy from MIT who last year discovered gravity waves, a physicist, and that was predicted by Einstein 100 years ago. And both of these men are very strong contenders for this year's Nobel Prize. So what I'm saying is this work is really solid research, and it's very frustrating that, you know, that Google would just try to brush it aside as a, I mean, if I were in charge of Google, I would be more than intrigued by this. I would say, hey, let's look into this. Let's figure out what's going on. We don't want to be flipping elections and influencing people's opinions, without anyone knowing that we're doing so. We don't want to be, we're not evil, right? We don't want to do such a thing.
Yeah.
And I would really
be the first step. If you were evil, would be to deny being evil, would it not?
Well, of course. And so it's really disappointing.
Yeah, their flat denial seems to be, and we are good, seems to be their general response. After reading your article, and of course Google was my search engine, and it was the default in my browser when my browser opened. So, and I thought I'd test your hypothesis. And so one of the other choices I had was a Bing search. And so I thought, okay, I'll put in somebody that's not really well known that maybe could be considered, not mainstream. And so I did a search on a radical black poet. I'm not going to give his name, but he was the subject of the search. And in Google, I got 5 pages of links to booksellers and book traders. I didn't get any information at all about him. I did the same search in Bing, and after the initial, all of them have the first 4 or 5 links are all advertising, paid advertising. You see that in Facebook and Twitter these days. But Immediately after that, I got meaningful information, substantive information about him, about his work, and links to some of his poems. And it was such a startling contrast. I just went, oh, wow. So I immediately changed my search engine to Bing, which is supposed to be more secure anyway. But I just thought I'd give you that little anecdotal experience.
Yeah.
And so I'm shying away. But you can't get away from Google, can you? I mean, they're everywhere in your life.
Well, you can't, because they're actually monitoring you, not just through the search engine, which is actually a device. It's not really what we think it is. It's not an information device. It's not what it is at all. It's a device for them to collect information about you, which they sell to advertisers. And, you know, that's why they're now bringing in revenues of $75 billion a year. And almost 100% of that comes from this model, where they just track you, and they're actually tracking you in more than 60 different platforms, actually, not just through the search engine. And then they just sell that information to advertisers. They're actually just an advertising agency with a very, very unusual and very deceitful model of collecting information about potential customers. I explore this, by the way, in an article I wrote for Time Magazine, which is called Google's Dance. If you look up Google's Dance and Time Magazine, or Google's Dance and my name, you'll get to that piece. But, you know, there's just so much going on here that would concern people if they knew what was going on. Let me just give you one pointer here, which I think you're gonna appreciate. One pointer for you and your listeners, which is that if you're wondering which search engine to use, well, honestly, Google really is the best, because they actually index right now about 45 billion web pages, whereas even Bing, which is the next best, only indexes about 15 billion. So Google actually really is the best, even though you can't trust what they're putting, you know, higher in rankings. But there is a way to use it without them tracking you, and that's to make as your default search engine, make it it's something called Start Page. If you use startpage.com, you actually have full access to Google's entire database, but with no tracking, zero tracking.
Let me interrupt you there for a second.
I
just want to tell our listeners, you're listening to Dan Spunnett, Experiment of Truth Telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. On air with us today is Dr. Robert Epstein, Senior Research Psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology, and the former Editor-in-Chief of Psychology Today. And we're discussing the power of search engines to affect your beliefs and your emotions. Call in if you have a question for Dr. Epstein or a comment. Our number here in the studio is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. Back to your point. So there is something we can do, make our original page when we open our browsers into, what did you call it, startpage.com.
Startpage.com, yes. And if you use Firefox, it's actually pretty easy to install it as your it's actually, no matter what you're using, you can make that your default page, your home page, that's what I use. It's called startpage.com, and it was set up by people who are real privacy fanatics, privacy advocates, and that's what I use. And I have not gotten any targeted ads now in more than a year and a half. So you can kind of, there are things you can do, you know, if you want to, have some degree of privacy. There are actually some things you can do. And the first thing you should do is make startpage.com, make that your default homepage, and use that and only that for searches. And, and don't use Chrome, for goodness sake. That's a Google product. Now, don't make it easy for them. The more information they collect about you, by the way, the more they customize search rankings. Whenever you're searching for anything, the more they customize it to try to impact you, to try to sell you things, or to try to change your views on things. The more they get to know you, the more they customize your search results, and that makes it even more dangerous. for you. You don't want them doing that. You don't want them to know about you, and you certainly don't want them to be influencing you without your knowledge or consent.
There are other things, virtual private networks, things like that. In doing research for this show, I found out also that if you use Gmail, everything also goes through their analytic algorithms, whatever that might be. And even the people that write to you on Gmail, then their email is also analyzed and somehow categorized for their use, which was a pretty startling thing. So if you're using Gmail, you've already given up all privacy in your email.
Well, I wish that was the only problem with Gmail. That's only a half of it. The other problem is if you use Gmail, they don't just scan and analyze; they store it. And so they keep it in your profile. They have every Gmail you've ever written and every email that you've ever received. And let's say you're just writing a draft of something because you're going to send an angry letter to your boss or something like that, and then you say, "No, I better not send that." They store that too. They even the emails you never finish and you don't send, they store those as well. Those become part of your profile. So Gmail is a nightmare. It is a complete nightmare when it comes to privacy, and people just are totally unaware. There is an article that came out yesterday in an investigative news site online. It's called The Intercept.
That's one of my favorites, by the way.
Yeah, well, this one is really something, and it's a very long, comprehensive article, and it's about the blurry line between Google and Obama's administration. And it is so detailed. I mean, it shows, for example, that since President Obama has been in office, there have been 250 people who have shifted one way or the other between high positions in the U.S. government and high positions at Google. 250, 427 visits to the White House by Google employees. 427. That's about 10 times more than any other company. And just on and on and on, this blurry line between the government and Google. But you see, why did I even bring that up? Because even though it's a fabulous article, I got to the end of it and I was just stunned. There's the name of the author and there's his email address. And guess what he uses?
Gmail.
He uses Gmail, which is insane. That means every single thing that he was talking about with people over the months that he researched this article, he was sharing it with Google. And they don't just analyze and store your emails. There are people there who have the password authority to read your emails. And these issues I explore in various articles I've written in recent years. The one that I wrote for U.S. News and World Report is called Google Gotcha. And that's about all the different ways they monitor you, and I talk a lot about Gmail in there. And then I wrote a piece for Dissent magazine, which I imagine is very popular among Pacifica listeners. And the piece I wrote for Dissent is called Google's Snoops, and it's about the internal culture there, where there are plenty of people at that company who have free access to all the information that they're collecting about us. And they even had to fire somebody who was so sloppy that he was looking up, the private information of teenage women and bragging to his friends about all the cool stuff he could look up, as a Google employee. And him they finally fired. But I mean, the point is there are a lot of people there who have free access to this material.
Yeah, it's interesting because you brought up The Intercept and Glenn Greenwald, who, of course, one of the founders of The Intercept website, which is a great source to follow. But he was the one also that interviewed Edward Snowden when he came out as right. You know, dumping all that NSA documents, which speaks to even more corporate involvement and snooping and surveillance. So we do have a worrisome surveillance state actually growing, a surveillance corporate state, I should say, because it's hard to see. The lines have been blurred, obviously, and that brings us kind of to Hillary Clinton, which I want to go to in a minute, but let me just remind our listeners one more time. You're listening to Unspun, an Experiment in Truth Telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today, Dr. Robert Epstein, Senior Research Psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology. We're talking about the influence of technology on our reasoning abilities, on our decisions and our elections. I also want to make one announcement here. It's close to the bottom of the hour, so I'll do that now. The Whole Earth and Watershed Festival is ongoing from 11 to 4 today. It's one of the more important ecological events that we have every year here in Reading. It's down at the Reading City Hall. Also, the Farmers Market is also part of that. So that's going to be open today at Reading City Hall. And KKRN is going to be there. We'll have a booth. And I will go down there later and want to be there. And if you'd like to come by and say hi to others at KKRN, you're welcome to do that. And we encourage you to do that and attend the festival. Well, coming back that blurred line, apparently it's even blurred more. Not only was Obama apparently working with Google and Google executives and continues to do so, and of course Google was one of the biggest contributors, Google and its employees donated something like $800,000 to his last campaign. And now Hillary Clinton it's implied that Google is supporting her and her campaign. Maybe you could tell us and the listeners a little more about what that involvement is with Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Sure, yes. This also, again, is very, very disturbing. It's natural for a company sometimes to say, well, this candidate is better than that candidate for our company, and therefore we're going to make a donation. And, of course, now, unfortunately, because of the controversial decision of the U.S. Supreme Court, the Citizens United decision, now, unfortunately, there's no limit to how much a company can contribute. So, that's been going on a long time, though, corporate support for one candidate or another. I get that. And if you think about it, that's a competitive process. One company might prefer, Romney or Trump, and another company might prefer Hillary Clinton, and I get that, and to some extent I'm okay with that, although I think there should be obviously limits on how much can be contributed. But sometimes the relationship is not proper, and in this case the relationship is not proper. The relationship between Obama and Google certainly was not proper in some respects. The Wall Street Journal reported, for example, that election eve, or before the day of the election in 2012, Eric Schmidt, the head of Google, who's now the head of Alphabet, which is the holding company for Google, Eric Schmidt was literally supervising Obama's technology staff in Chicago at his headquarters, was actually supervising his technology staff personally. To make sure that they could squeeze every single possible vote, out of the electorate, and this is very improper in my opinion. Obama's chief technology officer was hired away from Google, former Google executive, and the same things now have been happening with Hillary Clinton since last year. In a way, even more disturbing things. Hillary Clinton's chief technology officer, Stephanie Hannon, former Google executive. Eric Schmidt, head of Google, last year bankrolled a scary company called The Groundwork, Quartz.com, for whom I will apparently soon be writing columns. Quartz.com wrote an investigative piece about The Groundwork that is quite scary, And I would encourage listeners to go to thegroundwork.com, and you just want to be scared, just go to thegroundwork.com and see what pops up on your screen, because all that pops up is a very eerie-looking symbol on a gray background, and you cannot go past it. You cannot get past that symbol, and it looks like, some
a cult.
Some symbol for, yeah, like a cult symbol, exactly. Yeah. And the groundwork was set up for one purpose and one purpose only, completely bankrolled by Eric Schmidt, and that is to put Hillary Clinton in office using high technology.
Let me interrupt you because we've got a caller, sure. And he's been on the line for about 4 minutes, so I wanted to bring him up.
Sure.
Dennis, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Dennis.
Yeah, I just had an input. It's a very interesting conversation about it. I use Google all the time. But what I found, I did a little test myself, is I knew there's a program called Hitman Pro. And it's a antiviral malware program, but it's one of the only ones that will detect tracking cookies. And I actually would do a Hitman Pro clean after I do a search, and it would find a lot of tracking cookies and delete them. So I went on Google, did a Google search, went here, went there, and I had just cleaned the computer. And I said, okay, I just did this search and went here and there. Let me see what happened. So I went back and did another Hitman Pro clean. It found 120 tracking cookies. And this was in a period of about 4 minute search, 5 or 10 minute search.
Yep.
So I just routinely use that program, and I would encourage others to do it if you use that, to clean all those tracking cookies. It also finds PUPs. A lot of people don't know what a PUP is, but it's a probable unwanted program that's been loaded onto your computer. And it will find PUPs as well as the other viruses and malware. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in and share that with everybody.
Well, hopefully more and more people become aware and start using that sort of software, or they'll start building it in to some of our software that we already have.
Yeah. And I usually when I use Chrome, I use the Incognito. It's supposed to keep you from being tracked, but it doesn't work because I find a lot of tracking cookies after I do the search, so...
Yeah, and some cookies are good, like when you go to your bank, you know, they recognizes you, or PayPal, and it recognizes you, and some of those are supposedly safe. Anyway, Dr. Epstein, did you have a response? Or?
Well, first of all, you should, under no circumstances, should you use Chrome. And it's been well documented that no matter how you use Chrome, even incognito mode, you're still being tracked at times when you're unaware that you're being tracked. Under no circumstances should you use Chrome. You just can't protect yourself very well because Chrome is it. Chrome, if you go to my piece in U.S. News and World Report called Google's Gotcha, it explains why Chrome was developed. Chrome was developed because Google was getting information almost entirely through its search engine, but if you didn't go to a website through its search engine, if you went directly, then they had no way of knowing where you were going, and that was unacceptable to them, and that's why they developed Chrome. So no matter how you use Chrome, you're giving a tremendous amount of information about yourself, and I just find that unacceptable. So don't use Chrome. Use startpage.com, and there are lots of other things you can do too. You can use proxies and VPNs, and there are ways you can use the internet and fairly freely and protect yourself and not be monitored so much.
Yeah, Dennis, right. Did you have anything to add or?
No, the only other search engine I've heard of, and I've used DuckDuckGo, which is supposed to be pretty good one that retains the privacy. But
well, yes, Accesso doesn't track you, but again, they're indexing a very small number of pages on the internet. That's the problem. And so you really do want to have access to Google because they're indexing 45 billion pages. Again, the next closest to that is Bing, which is indexing only 15 billion. And but the way you access Google is through StartPage. If you just make StartPage.com your default browser, then you have complete privacy and you have access to Google's full index, which is, you want to have access to that because that's the biggest, best index. So, you have to be wary of how they're ordering things, that's for sure, because, they're ordering things in ways that make them money. That's a kind of a separate issue. You still want to have access to their big database because it's by far the biggest and the best.
Okay. Well, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis.
All right.
Bye-bye.
By the way, the both the European Union and the government of India have antitrust actions ongoing against Google, which puts Google at risk for paying literally billions and billions of dollars in fines. And the European Union just yesterday, I think it was, began another initiative against them. But the existing antitrust actions against Google, what they're for? They're for biased search rankings, because according to their analyses, Google search rankings are biased in ways that favor their own products and services over products and services of competitors. And so we know positively, in spite of, Amit Singhal's denial, we know that Google search rankings are definitely biased. And, what our research shows is that this bias in ranking, can be used to very dramatically to influence people's opinions and attitudes and beliefs and their thinking on practically any issue, even on who you're going to vote for. You can have a dramatic impact on the undecided voters, the swing voters, and of course, in close elections, those are the people who decide the winner.
Well, that brings us to probably the most important question, and at least right now, is Google actively using their technology to put Hillary Clinton in the White House? Do we have seems like a natural extension of your work to somehow be able to sample and determine how that's happening. Can we definitively say that they are using their technology to put Hillary Clinton in the White House?
Well, as far as definitive goes, that would require one of two things. Either a whistleblower, and there are very few people ever defect from Google because Google pays so well and they make people sign these draconian contracts. So it would either take a whistleblower or it would take a warrant. One W or the other, whistleblower or warrant. And so far, we don't have definitive evidence, but there is evidence. So even though it's not, definitive at this point, there is evidence. So a couple months ago, for example, Slate.com published a piece which is about the research of someone that we work with, a man named Nicholas Diakopoulos, who's a professor at the University of Maryland. And he and his colleagues, looking at Google search rankings, found a systematic bias in their rankings for Democratic candidates. But they weren't looking yet at individual candidates, because this was a few months ago, too early to do that. But they found a systematic bias in favor of Democratic candidates in the search rankings. So that's been established. Now, as far as establishing whether they're singling out Hillary Clinton, well, it's a little tricky because, remember, they're sending more and more, they're sending out customized, personalized search rankings. So the search rankings you see are different than the search rankings I see. So think of the problem in trying to really monitor that. I mean, we're talking about something that would be extremely difficult, maybe even impossible to monitor, because they're sending out search results to billions of people, and more and more of those are customized. How would we track that is the problem. What we do know, another thing we do know, is that more and more they are trying to figure out who the undecided voters are. And that's why they set up their political information service, which started a couple of months ago. And so now, a lot of times when you look something up on Google.com, which you should never use, by the way, right? You should only use startpage.com. But if you look something up directly in Google.com about a candidate, you'll get all this stuff at the top. And on the side talking about the candidate. And the reason they're doing that is because they want to see where you click. They're trying to determine who the undecided voters are. And the reason they're doing that is because those are the people they want to shift. And we know from the research we've been doing on SEEM for years now, that undecided voters are in fact pretty easy to shift. And especially in some demographic groups. So the shift can be as high as 80% in some demographic groups. The most vulnerable demographic group we've found so far in the U.S. is moderate Republicans. That's where we actually got an 80% shift in one of our studies.
That is interesting. That was one of the questions I had for you, because I didn't know what that demographic would be. That is very interesting, and we see that on other talk shows and Fox News. There seems to be a gullibility factor with moderate Republicans and the Tea Party. I've seen this manifest in other on websites and other issues. They seem to be easily affected, and also they'll fiercely fight for what they believe. Kind of
well,
a bad combination.
The moderate Republicans, as far as we can tell, are the easiest to convert. If you want to think of this in terms of radical Islam, the moderate Republicans are the ones you can radicalize. And again, what we're showing is it just something as simple as the order in which search results are displayed. Is enough to have a dramatic impact on a lot of different demographic groups. Overall, nationally, in a study we did with more than 2,000 people and from all 50 states, we got a shift there of close to 40% overall, and again, much, much higher in some demographic groups. So this is a big, scary effect. It is one of the largest, if not the largest, behavioral effects I've ever seen in the behavioral sciences, and I've been in behavioral sciences now for more than 30 years. And the other aspect of this that's disturbing is that almost no one can detect that they're seeing biased search ranking. So in a big national study we did in India during their election in 2014, 99.5% of the people in the study showed no awareness that they were seeing biased search rankings, even though they were, because we were showing them biased search rankings favoring one candidate or another, but 99.5% of them could not detect that they were seeing biased rankings. And the very few people who could detect it, they shifted even farther in the predicted direction. So just being able to spot the bias, that doesn't protect you from this manipulation, because even those few people can detect the bias, they look at it and they say, oh, the search results are strongly favoring this candidate, so this candidate must be good. That's how high the trust is people have in search ranking.
Well, let me remind our listeners one more time. You're listening to Unspun, an Experiment in Truth-Telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. On air with us today is Dr. Robert Epstein, Senior Research Psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology and the former Editor-in-Chief of Psychology Today. We're discussing the power of search engines to affect your beliefs and your elections and your emotions to some degree. Our call-in number is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. We invite your questions and comments. I could see where it's kind of discouraging. I also, when I was looking around, there was a statement by Stephen Hawking recently when a student asked him, will the world end naturally or will man destroy it first? And Hawking answered, quote, most of the threats we face come from the progress we've made in science and technology. We are not going to stop making progress or reverse it, so we must recognize the dangers and control them. I'm an optimist, and I believe we can. Me personally, I differ from Hawking's. I just don't share his optimism. I know we can make the changes. The question is, will we, and will we in time, to avoid some of the unintended consequences or even some of the intended consequences. So what are your thoughts on Hawking's statement?
Well, Hawking is quite correct, and I actually have written about this a little bit myself. I in my writings, I call the internet the internest with a capital N, because I think that someday if people still exist, they will look back and realize that the internet that we've been building just for fun and for business purposes really is just a nest. We're building a nest for an artificial intelligence that will at some point emerge, and the moment that it emerges, whether it emerges in in Google's headquarters or it emerges in someone's laboratory at a university, wherever it emerges, it will immediately jump into the internet. And of course, it could emerge on the internet itself. And once it does that, it will be impossible to kill. And what it will do at that point is unknowable. So, obviously the optimist is going to say, it'll help us, whatever, solve our problems. The pessimist is going to say that it will lead to a scenario like we see in movies like The Terminator or The Matrix that will basically destroy the human race, if it sees us as a threat. But really and truly, it's unknowable. In other words, what's going to happen next is impossible to know, because this artificial intelligence living in the internet is going to be beyond any kind of intelligence we can imagine. And what it does or doesn't do, it's beyond us. It's going to figure out what it's going to do. And so I don't know if that makes me an optimist or a pessimist, maybe just a realist, but that time is coming, and it's certainly coming within 20 years. And what's going to happen, the next day or the next nanosecond is, in my opinion, is unknowable. In fact, I've just reviewed a book for Scientific American called In Our Own Image, which is written by a PhD in artificial intelligence named Zarkadakis. And it's quite interesting. And Zarkadakis, in this new book, I think it's come out already. If not, it's coming out soon. Zarkadakis actually draws exactly the same conclusion that I do, which is that, this day is coming, and it's coming pretty soon, and what's going to happen once this new intelligence emerges is unknowable. And that's what I've been saying for 20 years. And that's, I think a lot of us are going to be alive to see what happens, but I don't think any of us is going to be in a position to control what happens, because we've built this massive infrastructure, the internet, which is impossible to shut down. The movie Transcendence, starring Johnny Depp, which came out a couple years ago, which I think is a pretty good movie, it actually, looks at, I guess you could say it was written by pessimists, because it looks at the worst case, and that's in which the only way to shut down this intelligence that's jumped into the internet and that's a threat to our existence is to shut down the internet. So the movie is an apocalypse movie, and basically the only way people can protect themselves from this intelligence is to basically put us back to the Stone Ages, pretty much. I mean, we really, you know, to shut down the internet these days means to shut down pretty much everything, so people don't even have electricity.
Yeah, another interesting one on, along that same line is iRobot, which is one of my favorites, but it's a takeoff on the same theme. My thoughts are that we won't have to worry about this because our own human, what they call the progress trap, if you've heard of that, is basically the same things that this progress, like Hawkins refers to, is has unintended consequences that we are not able or willing to take action against. And we see this, I mean, climate change is an obvious example of the same thing. We've created this monster, and yet we don't want to tame the monster, even to preserve our own lives and the future of our children. So this is why I become pessimistic. I think human intelligence, let alone artificial intelligence, is going to bring about an end to this ongoing progress trap, because at some point we will have created a situation where we and the internet and anything related to it, even civilization as we know it, will no longer exist, and we'll probably have a planet that's not survivable by maybe microbes and small living creatures in the depths of the oceans may survive it. So we have it's a similar. The analogy is the same, even with AI. If you take in human intelligence, look where we're going.
Well, sure. You know, this is because, by the way, of a phenomenon that psychologists have studied for decades. It's because we are short-term thinkers. We look at the immediate consequences of our action. We have a lot of trouble looking at the long-term, delayed consequences of our action. We're just built that way because that's the way nature built us. That's all that really matters. If you're an animal, is pretty much the immediate consequences of what you do, and we can visualize to some extent what's going to happen in the future, but that doesn't have too much impact on our behavior. Now, having said that, now and then we have found ways around this problem. So, for example, the anti-smoking campaign has been pretty successful in the U.S. And the key is you have to bridge the gap between, the bad things that could happen in the future and the present. You have to build a bridge so that people every minute, every second, they're very much aware of these long-term horrible consequences. And that's why, warnings on cigarette packs, and among other things, have in fact been helpful in reducing the rate of smoking. So it's not impossible, to change people and get them to behave a little more responsibly, but it's a big task because it goes against human nature. Human nature, again, looks at short-term consequences, not long-term.
And large corporate interests have learned from that campaign. Apparently, some of the large energy producers, oil production people, have learned from that, and starting back 20 years ago, started putting out propaganda, advertising, whatever you want to call it, to reverse that, to add a certain amount of distrust of science, and we've seen that lately. And so maybe that bridge is not as easy to build as it once was.
Right. Well, corporations, their interest is in the bottom line. So, that's a problem too, because the bottom line usually has to do with, just getting on with business, whatever business it is. And even though the environment might be harmed. And when it comes to the internet, high tech and AI, Hawking is correct. There's no way to stop what's happening because people are making money from it. So, every little aspect of this, whether it's what's called speech recognition technology or speech production, or there are really dozens and dozens of specialties in high tech, there people make money off of these things. So all of these little technologies are moving forward very rapidly. And when they start merging, when these technologies start merging, we will see the emergence of the first true machine intelligence. And what happens next, as I said, is unknowable. But what happens after that, once this intelligence emerges, could be disastrous for humankind. Unfortunately, a lot of people like Hawking are very worried about what will happen next. And then my old friend Ray Kurzweil, he's the optimist. You know, what happens next is going to be wonderful and will increase human intelligence and allow some of us to live forever and so on. So we'll have to see. As I say, it's coming pretty soon, so a lot of us are going to be around to see what happens.
Yeah, it's an interesting time for sure. We only have a little less than a minute, so anything else you'd like to tell our listeners? You'll hear some music come on in the background, and that's our cue to get off.
Well, yes, I really would like to call your listeners' attention to a piece that I published recently in Eon magazine. If you just look up The New Mind Control and then Eon, which is AEON, you should get to it, or The New Mind Control and my name, which is Epstein, you will get to it. And this is my current summary of all of the issues involving new forms of mind control emerging on the Internet, which are emerging very rapidly, and the fact that most of these new forms of mind control are entirely invisible to people. And so that's what I would encourage people to look at, The New Mind Control.
Okay, well, that's our music in the background. Dr. Robert Epstein, I want to thank you very much for being on Unspun with us today.
My pleasure, Doug.
And maybe we'll get to talk again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, you've been listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth telling. Our guest today has been Dr. Robert Epstein, senior research psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology, as well as a former editor-in-chief of Psychology Today. I will put links along with the archives of this show up on kkrn.org, and if you're interested in downloading it as an MP3, I can provide a link if you send me an email at unspun@kkrn.org. Next week on Unspun, we're going to have Dr. Lori Wallach. She is the director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, Harvard-trained lawyer. Wallach has promoted interest in regarding globalization and international commercial agreements such as the TTP and the TIP, the secretive trade agreements. So tune in next week, Saturday, 9 a.m., and also now Unspun plays again at 4 p.m. on Wednesday afternoons. So if you miss Saturday, you can tune in at 4 p.m. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and underwriters like yourself. Go to kkrn.org and click on the donate button to support our efforts. Next up, Tom Hartman on KKRN. Stay tuned.